You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I try to watch to see if I see any interactions on the sideline or anything. Not that I see a guy walking right past another guy. I can't imagine that now. I remember those days because I had those days, and it's because I didn't trust the guy and I didn't like the guy. I didn't think he knew what he was doing. And if you read my body language back in those days with those teams that I was on, you could tell that I was pissed off. And when I see Aaron Rodgers on the sideline and I see him after the game in the postgame press conference, there is a major issue there, and both will deny it. I guarantee it, but there is an issue there because you have this 40-year-old Hall of Fame quarterback to be dealing with a coach that I think he doesn't respect.
It was Boomer Esiason. I think that was from about a week or so ago, talking about the relationship between Robert Saleh and Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
It's the push, but hey, don't hug me.
Yeah, don't get up in my
don't
space.
Don't you touch me. Yeah, that's basically what happened between Rodgers and Saleh. If you haven't seen the clip,
and this is what I mean. I tweeted it a few minutes ago. I want Saleh to do a tell-all.
Yes, that would
that's
be
all
so
I want.
Good.
That's all I want.
Cancel Hard Knocks next offseason. Just have Robert Saleh
get Netflix on the horn.
Ooh,
Love Is Blind season 7 is out right now. A little strange. Get Netflix on the horn.
All of the former
let's go.
All of the former Rodgers coaches should do a little sit down.
That'd be weird. I don't know. Talk about how bad
Aaron Rodgers was.
No, it's going to be like something where like every now and then you get like Nathaniel Hackett in there where he's like, actually, like I see him like a brother.
Yeah,
and
then you get McCarthy. The contrast.
Yeah, then you get McCarthy and you're like, I hated the man. He won me a Super Bowl and I hated the man.
Who was his coach in college?
I was in Cal. Barely counts.
Well, that's true.
They're now in the ACC. Although they're good in the ACC, and they did very, very good for College game day, great night game. Probably should have beaten Miami. I'll give credit to Cal there. But at the time when Rodgers was there, it barely counted.
Jeff Tedford.
You made that up.
Nope. Real guy.
Nope.
He actually was named Pac-10 Coach of the Year twice. And he also holds the Cal program record for most wins, games coached, and bowl victories.
Good for him. He won a dead conference twice.
And this is back when it was called the Pac-10, not the Pac-12.
When right. It was elite.
That's the important note there is
it was the Pac-10 for like ever.
Man, Washington, I'm just looking at the 2004 season, they went 1-10, 0-8 in the conference.
There we go.
That's a season right there.
Gotta love it.
That looks like my College Football 25 franchises.
I don't know how you do that. Like I will take a team where
video games
at worst we're going 8-5.
Video games where you have to simulate sports, it never goes well for me. I could have the best team in the league in no matter what sport. I could have 95s all over the roster, and I would still lose to the worst team just because of a simulation.
Gotta hate that.
It's cool. It's great.
Real quick hockey update as well. We did hear from Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff earlier today with Jeremy and Joe, but our own Paul Hamilton just about a minute ago is tweeting out that Paterka, Benson, and Abe Kubel are not practicing today. Kubel obviously on IR. Benson, it seemed like, was a little bit further away. Paterka, though, still, you know, possibility he could play on Thursday.
That's what Lindy said this morning. He said he said he would skate away from the team, so that explains why he's not at practice.
Yep. He's getting away from the team. All right, back to football and your calls. Again, 803-0550, the number to call. Again, the big news from today, Robert Saleh has been fired as Jets head coach just 5 games into year 4 as Jets head coach. It sounds like from a lot of these Jets reporters, namely Connor Hughes, SNY, seems like a stunning move. I also kind of agree, but also not. For me, at least, it seems to be more the timing rather than the actual firing. I think this could have happened last year if Saleh or if Rodgers just hadn't gotten hurt. But let's get back to your phone calls. 803-0550, again, the number to call. Let's go to Mike here on the line. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well.
I got 2 names for you. One is a potential coaching hire, Pete Carmichael. He was the offensive coordinator for the Saints for actually 15 years, familiar with Joe Brady. He's currently a defensive assistant on the Broncos. So I'm wondering what the rules are of whether we could hire him. And then the second name is a potential trade, Jalen Hyatt from the New York Giants. You got Joe Shane over there. Brian Daboll got some familiarity. he's a receiver with deep threat. Maybe we could do a player trade with Taylor Elam or some sort of draft pick to help our team out. What do you think?
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. In terms of the Carmichael thing, no, I'm good. He was in New Orleans forever. Mm-hmm. I don't think they can hire another guy from a different team in season. It has to be after the season, so I think that's kibosh anyways. Also, again, they're not firing McDermott, and they're certainly not going to bring in Pete Carmichael to do so. He was in New Orleans from 2009 to 2023.
We saw how that team was.
They do nothing modern. They did nothing modern. That was the big thing with Clint Kubiak. Now, their offensive line, New Orleans' offensive line, has gotten demolished. And now
Derek Carr's hurt, potentially.
Man, that pick he threw last night, real quick on that, the one where he's like going on his back foot and just like throws it up there to no one in particular.
Right, yeah.
I'm watching it with my dad, and we're both just sitting there like, what?
That's the Derek Carr we know and love.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
and he also targets Chris Olave once.
Don't even get me started on that.
Sorry. Had to.
Now, in terms of Jalen Hyatt, though, that is a former Biletnikoff Award winner.
So,
and he's doing nothing.
I was about to say, Jalen Hyatt last year, rookie season with Daniel Jones.
Kind of nothing still,
but you're with Daniel Jones. Seven starts. 40 targets, 23 receptions, 373 yards, no touchdowns. This year, started two games, has three targets and no catches.
Oh, he has been targeted, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Three of them.
Okay.
Interesting.
I didn't realize he had gotten targeted yet. I thought it was literally a nothing burger for him.
So, the idea of Jalen Hyatt is the right direction of what he is or could be or was or whatever you want to look at him, because he's not doing anything this year. But when he was drafted, kind of, I don't know what you would call him, because it was one of those where it felt kind of almost like a Khalil Shakir pick, where it's like, yeah, he could be good, but he also could be nothing. That's kind of why you drafted him later in the draft.
Yeah, I liked Hyatt. I mean, they get him in round three.
Oh, he was. Oh, I didn't realize he was that high. I thought he was
for me,
fifth or sixth.
No, for me though, really, why he wasn't at the top at number one. For sort of a deep ball guy, it's not like he had that breakaway speed. Stuff, yeah, Worthy's a record breaker, but he wasn't even close really there. Ran a 4.4 at the combine, and he kind of got good kind of out of nowhere in his last season. He went from just over 500 yards and 41 catches through 2 years, and then in 2022, boom, 67 catches, over 1,200 yards and 15 touchdowns. He was very limited in what he could do, but in terms of what the Bills actually need, if you could trade like a sixth-round pick, you got two of them, and bring him in, I don't actually hate that, because he'd be cost-effective, and he does do something that you need, which is stretch the field.
Right, but the only problem there, though, is I feel like with that specific player, with Jalen Hyatt, I feel like he's more of a decoy in a way. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that teams would go out and just get a player to just run routes and do nothing, but like you just said, he doesn't really have that breakaway speed, so can he create separation, which we've seen Bills players not really be able to do at times this year? And I just wonder, is that caliber of that kind of player what you're looking for?
No, I don't think so.
Right. So I feel it'd be a very small Band-Aid on a very large cut.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you're taking a Hello Kitty Band-Aid and putting it over a open wound that needs stitches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not going to work. But at the same time, if you're desperate and it's a cheap, cost-effective move, why not give it a shot? I mean, what did you say? You ran a 4.4?
Yep.
It's not great. He's behind Marvin Mims.
I mean, and to be fair, the Bills really can't use guys that have speed anyways. Curtis Samuel.
True, right.
That's frustrating mess.
Trey Palmer ran a 4.3.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
I don't know. I'm just looking through, like,
I'm back now to thinking about the Curtis Samuel thing, man. They're paying $8 million a year to a guy who's got, what, 9 catches for under 50 yards so far?
Right.
Man, what are they doing with him?
And I think the other problem, he's not running down the field. That's what they're doing. He's not going down the field. And
I mean, he was never really a field-stretching guy, but like, he's always a solid wide receiver. Mike Schoaf's brought this up a lot, and I think it's right. It's just, you got six slot guys.
Mm-hmm.
There's no differentiating between any of them.
Right, And if you're another team scheming for the Bills on defense, you're looking down the list of names and go, well, okay, Keon Coleman, he can be a down the field threat. We got to watch out for him. And everyone else is right over the middle and is a slot receiver. Cool. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So double team or triple team Keon Coleman, and, you know.
You kind of saw it in week one, too.
Limit the rest.
You saw it in week one against Arizona. basically no defense for any other receivers except Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw a few of those plays where he's triple, quadruple covered. It was just like, no, like literally go but to anyone
else. The problem is there, though, is it, or well, not the problem. The thing there was that, you know, hey, Dalton Kincaid is double, triple, quadruple covered. Okay, let's just dump it off to everybody else and move down the field slowly. That works. But after these first, I mean, that was the first week where you really just got locked up. Against Miami, you never really had the problem of like your target guy getting crazy cover.
Mm-hmm.
And same with Jacksonville. But then the same thing kind of happens against Baltimore and Houston, where it's, well, the target guy is locked up. What are we going to do? Oh, we can pass it short and you know, work up the field slowly. No, let's not do that.
Yeah.
Let's still try to stretch the field and pass it to the guy that's in double coverage, who happens to be Mac Hollins.
I just have so...
Like, that's the thing. It's like, you can't...
12 targets, 3 catches over the last 2 games
for
Mac Hollins.
You can't sit here and tell me that...
It is horrific.
You see him double covered, and you try to throw the ball to him. He's not that kind of player.
He can't track a deep ball. Yeah, he's never been that kind of guy. And I don't want to just say it's the wide receivers. You also have a quarterback in Josh Allen. We talked about it before the season started. He's not a particularly good deep ball thrower.
Right.
And then you've got him throwing to a guy who seemingly can't track a deep ball. Realistically, is not a guy like Nico Collins. He had a big-time catch before he went out. Literally, the play that ultimately caused him to leave the game with a hamstring injury is that touchdown.
Yeah.
Or even a guy like, well... All right, I'm going to start throwing out like big name receivers here, I guess. But like, you know, Justin Jefferson or even, you know, Stephon Diggs when he was first here, where Allen could just chuck it up and they were just, they knew exactly where they needed to be. They read the ball perfectly. They read it in the air perfectly and they came down with it.
Well, I mean,
Allen before Diggs and now after Diggs is a bad deep ball thrower.
Look at the Keon Coleman touchdown. Yes, it's a 49-yard touchdown.
It was a 10-yard route.
Right.
Maybe. I think I'm being nice there.
And think back to the Gabe Davis 98-yard touchdown. It was, what, a 25-yard pass?
I mean, it was a deep ball pass. I actually should have thrown Gabe Davis in there. Davis could track a deep ball.
Right.
Well, Davis could really track a deep ball.
He could, but could Allen always hit him? No.
No.
And that's the thing is you have these receivers that can make these catches and track these balls, but a large part of the time, all these deep touchdowns, these long touchdowns, are mostly because of the receivers creating that play.
Yeah,
that's the thing now is you don't have a receiver that can create that play.
Yeah, and to this point though, Michael tweeted into me a little while ago. The deep shot to Hollins, the first deep shot to Hollins, hit his fingertips. Do players not dive anymore? If he dives, he catches that. I don't love that. Two things on that. One, he is wide open. Allen, it is pitch and catch.
Right. Just
two,
toss it.
Hollins got to track that better because he looked confused. And three, diving is not like a for sure catch thing. They're now diving out to catch a ball in which very good chance, very realistic chance, that ball is going to hit the ground and they will not actually catch it.
Or you're going to catch it, and as you're trying to pull it in, bounce the ball off the turf out of your hands.
Yeah, like it's also...
It's not like you're in the air
for three seconds. It's not a foolproof thing, and I think that's why guys don't dive for balls. It's not a foolproof thing. If anything, you're taking yourself out of the play, but giving a little more effort.
It looks better. The eye test looks better. But,
the eye test, other than that,
it's really not a statistical advantage. Now, it's different in when you're laying out for like a baseball, you have a glove. Like, and that's, I think, part of the thing is where people might get that idea from is, hey, look, that guy laid out, got dirty, made a crazy out. Yeah, well, it's a different sport.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Mark on the line. Mark, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Just in reference to the Robert Saleh, Aaron Rodgers ordeal with the Jets, I mean, how many more games does Sean McDermott have to cost Josh Allen for this to be an issue here in Buffalo? I mean, it's every big game that we have where McDermott can't seal the deal. It's something that he does that affects the outcome of this game. And if I'm Josh Allen, I mean, it's almost like I love comparing, who is it? The Warriors coach who drafted all those guys.
Steve Kerr
for the NBA, and then they bring in Steve Kerr, right? I just feel like we are lacking that, and I love McDermott, and it stinks because I want to win. I never wanted to win with a coach so bad. Everything he's done to this community, the character that, you know, we don't know these guys personally, but everything on paper is unbelievable. But something's got to give, and I think If I'm Josh Allen, I'm kind of getting fed up. I just went 9-33 and against a good team. We blow out these small teams, and I think that's the outlier, right? You have Josh Allen. You should not be Bill Belichick. He didn't really have to do much with Tom Brady, right? All these guys, like you guys referenced Mike Shanahan. He had John Elway. Well, Sean McDermott has the second-best quarterback in the league until last week. I'm just fired up about it. I want McDermott's seat to be hotter. I'm going to have to listen. Thanks, boys.
Thanks for the call, Mark.
I don't think you can compare Saleh and Rodgers to Allen and McDermott at all, because Allen is a much better person than Aaron Rodgers. I mean, they're completely different in terms of how they act in the public eye, and they're also they're different people.
And I don't know how much Allen and McDermott ultimately interact.
That's true too. Mike brought that up
on yesterday, and she's like how much do they? I don't know. I don't know how much they interact. I will say though, Mark, I kind of understand your point, but like if I'm Allen and I'm getting mad at the head coach because I went 9-30, it was not 9-33, it was 9-30. I don't know, man. Look at yourself in the mirror. Hit a throw.
Yeah,
he was 33 completion percentage, 30 completion percentage, something like that. It's one of the worst stat lines ever. I don't know, man. Look at yourself in the mirror. We've been talking about it. He can't hit a deep ball.
Mm-hmm.
He had guys wide open. And there were not very many of those.
And I still,
they were bad.
Yeah, and I still look back, too, to that last drive, the three throws.
If that's McDermott?
I don't think that's McDermott. I really don't. I think that was Josh, go out there and do your thing and see what happens. But
the first play to Hollins, though,
mm-hmm.
that looked like that was the design, to go to Hollins deep, yeah. what have you.
Yeah.
That could be on McDermott, sure. Allen's not complaining about that.
No.
He's the quarterback. He's going to like being aggressive.
And he's going to like being able to be like, hey, this is my job.
And this is your time. Go win it.
Right.
There's a lot I'm going to put on McDermott. I think, yeah, the late game decisions. I think, though, it's got to be on McDermott, though. There's no way he's letting the quarterback and the OC decide that. Like, that's on him.
Well,
I don't love, though, that yesterday when they're speaking with the media, is both McDermott and Brady had very different kind of mm-hmm. feelings on what happened. McDermott was much more apologetic and what have you. Brady seemed to be more, I could be very much misremembering this. I want to listen to that again, but very much more like, we need to execute better.
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
But at the same time, executing better in that specific situation would have been running the ball, not, well, we should have passed the ball better. You have 20 seconds left. You're tied. Maybe not 20.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember now. But
it was tied. It was tied. 20-20.
No, how much time was left on the clock. But just run the ball, or at least look like you're going to, because there was no one in the backfield. You know, you didn't even like attempt to look like you're running the ball. And
there was 32 seconds
32.
When he throws that incomplete pass to Keon Coleman, which ultimately was almost a pick.
Right. Yeah, if Coleman doesn't
it was a poorly thrown
if
ball.
If Coleman doesn't have pass interference there, I think that might get picked off. And then the third throw to Samuel looked like it was going to work, but you skip it.
Well, yeah, he was hit as he threw. So
yeah, that's true.
But for me, just real quick on that, we don't want to spend too much time again. We're past the 24 hours. We're on to the Jets. They fired their head coach, in case you didn't hear. Robert Saleh's fired.
Woohoo!
For me, though, it was more just after the first pass really did not go well. You almost threw a pick. Keon Coleman has to commit pass interference to not have an interception be thrown there.
I thought the Hollins pass was first.
No, it was Coleman first, then Hollins.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm misremembering.
And that's why it's my problem of you then went to a play that looked like the play was to go to Hollins deep. There was no change in anything they were doing. They, with zero timeouts, basically looked like they were trying to commit 13 seconds. You had no timeouts. Your wide receivers hadn't gotten open all day. And your quarterback at the time of the drive starting was 9-27. I don't know. Maybe reevaluate after that quarterback almost throws a pick on the first pass of that drive and try to run it, force a timeout, get a little bit out of the end zone. Now, at that point, you're probably not getting a first down. You'd have to get a big run from Cook, and you're probably not. But you at least give the punter more room where in the end zone, he can't do his normal step. He has to get it, boot it. He can't do the normal buildup to actually punt it, to push it further down. And even then, it was a pretty solid punt. They still had to have the good return. They still had to run a play after that. But if you can at least get them through their timeouts, they can't throw to the middle of the field. They have to go to the boundaries. They have to go to the sidelines.
If you just burn one timeout.
And that is on McDermott. Man, there's bad clock management everywhere in the NFL.
Well,
in the same game, DeMeco Ryans.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Right. And even before that too, when the Bills use all of their timeouts in the fourth quarter, I mean, what was that? You know, if you don't use all the timeouts and you're still trying to like throw the ball and stuff, then I kind of understand it. You have, you know, potential to get down the field, call a timeout and keep moving. But earlier in the game, you use all your timeouts well before you even need to. And I just, I don't know. Obviously, like you said, it's past 24 hours. It's still
the end game by both teams just had me mind boggled. Like, right. If I'm a Houston fan, I'm leaving that game incredibly frustrated for two reasons. One, we look like garbage for five straight weeks now. We're 4-1, yes, but we do not look like a team that's going to actually win a Super Bowl. And two, the main guy on our offense, the real game breaker, hurt with a hamstring, is week to week.
Yeah. And three,
like, you won the game, but at what cost kind of deal?
The game management, obviously. And like, that goes into, you know, not looking good, but
yeah,
that would be a big deal if I'm a Houston fan.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Matt on the line. Matt, how are we doing today?
Hey guys, I have to disagree with a couple points. I know everyone wants to bury McDermott about the end of the game thing.
Matt, do we still have you?
I'm not, oh, there we not go. Forcing a 10-second runoff. And when they got the intentional grounding, he could have forced a 10-second runoff. But he chose not to. So that is a mistake on his part, because that would have took 10 seconds off the clock. But you got to think of it this way. They were trying to run the ball the entire second half, and they basically got stuffed pretty much all second half for maybe like one run. So you got to think that Houston's expecting them to run down there. They're not probably going to get much of anything. And if you run the ball down there, sure, you make them burn the timeouts, but the plays are also a lot quicker than a pass play. You're giving them an extra 10 seconds when you punt the ball. So, yeah, you made them burn three timeouts, but now instead of being 12 seconds, they have 22 seconds. So they still could have ran a play and spiked the ball in the middle of the field. Same result. Not people aren't thinking about that a pass play is much longer than a run play.
Well, yeah, but Matt, to this argument, we're saying that either pass three times or run three times. I'm just saying don't pass it three times. That ultimately you moved nowhere. You didn't kill all that much time. They still had all their timeouts.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter outside of them getting a first down. They needed to get a first down. That was the end result. However they did it, needed a first down.
Yeah, and they weren't going for first downs. They were going
for
kill shots.
Other than that, it wouldn't have made any difference.
Yeah, but they weren't going for first downs. They were going for kill shots. Thanks for the call, Matt. They weren't going for first down. They were going for kill shots. They went deep to Coleman, and the next play went deep to Hollins. They were not going for a first down.
They don't even have to go for a first down. Realistically,
I don't disagree with that point. They did.
I think you burn all
the timeouts, and then you go to overtime.
I think if you have three short runs that don't result in a first down. One, you're out of your end zone. Two, you burn all three of their timeouts. Three, your punter has more room to work with, and you can get the ball further. That's why you don't even have to go for a first down. Sure, if you get one, it's nice, but you don't have to because you don't have your timeouts. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
But that's been my frustration. I agree on the first point, though. Probably should have taken the 10-second runoff. However,
yes,
as you saw how they played the rest of it, they had no desire to do that. They were going to go for kill shots. They wanted to try to do 13 seconds to Houston, and I cannot for the life of me understand why. This was not the 13 seconds game where Allen and Mahomes were both on fire and were just torching defenses. This is a game where, starting that drive, you were 9 for 27, and you threw two deep balls in a row, one of which, the first one, was almost intercepted. The second one is to Mac Hollins, who does nothing to fight for the ball. It's just, to me, the whole thing looked broken. It didn't look like there was really much of a plan. It felt like the team thought they had way more time and a timeout to be doing so. I did not understand it at all. Let's go back to the phones here before our next timeout. We've got Marvin on the line. Marvin, how are we doing today?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm listening now, and everybody thinks old Marvin's a salty guy. Well, I am, but I speak from, and I love the Bills, but at the end of the day, there are so many things that I've said and called in, and they're coming to fruition. And it's not because it's just the way McDermott coaches. I there's a few things I just want to bring up. At the end of the game, they're trying to get extra yards. Did you see the defense he had us in? He's a defensive coach. He had our safeties in the end zone. They're just trying to get enough yards to get a field goal. The guy is bizarre. I mean, Trubisky comes in. I'm yelling at my buddies, call a timeout. And they put him in. You knew what he was going to hand the ball off. I mean, it's just, it's so sad. It's so sad. He's not a good coach. He is not a good coach. He craps himself at the improper two times. And the UB kids that they have, it's a nice story. But every time I look, the UB products, they just like Brown, no speed whatsoever. No speed at all. It's we're in for a long season, guys. I hate to say it. We're in for a long season. And I feel bad for Josh Allen. But everything you guys and people are calling in, Josh Allen could never throw a good long ball. You know, he's a great quarterback. I love the guy. Brown is going to tackle. Spencer Brown's going to get him killed still. That guy's got cinder blocks for feet. But it's just at the end of the day, guys, everybody that's calling in is fortifying everything that I've said to you guys. And, you know, they think that, oh, Marvin's a salty guy. Well, I am a little bit, but I shoot from the hip. And it's nice to hear people, unfortunately, say the things I've been saying for a long time. Samuel is the biggest. Those plays they did with Samuel off the line of scrimmage, six plays, got nothing. Are they trying to justify the $8 million? I don't know. But your comments, guys, I love listening to you. And it makes my day to hear you guys. Talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Marvin. I disagree on saying McDermott's not a good coach. There's no statistical proof to that. He wins a playoff game almost every year. They've made the playoffs, what is it now, six straight years?
Mm-hmm.
To me, and this is sports, so it's not just football or even here or whatever, too much do we go, they're terrible or they're great. There is a middle ground there, and I would have McDermott in around the middle ground. I'd have him as a top 10 coach in the NFL because most coaches in the NFL are kind of garbage. They're not great. They're just not. You have the greats. Matt LaFleur, I think, is amazing. Kevin O'Connell's awesome. Sean McVay, great. But even Bill Belichick, who was great, kind of teetered off a little bit. I think McDermott is still a good coach. He's not great. He has his issues. But that defense is constantly ready to go. And to Marvin's point, you know, the UB guys are a great story, but every time I see them, no, because for the first half of the year, they were great. They were injured to hell, and it didn't matter. Their defense was swarming them. They kind of still were against Houston. It's a bad miscommunication for Cole, and we'll see, you know, or we'll never see what would have happened if Nico Collins was able to stay in the game. But ultimately, it's a bad miscommunication by rookie safety. Outside of that, though, Houston scores 23 points. They score 3 points in the second half. And C.J. Stroud still threw for 300 yards, but they scored 3 points in the second half. Now, I will say, though, to Marvin's point on the end of the game where the safeties are like way in the back and like they're almost off the screen. I saw that like an hour or two after the game, they put up the little spots where, you know, you can see the dots going and you just see the safeties just
drift off,
flying away.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Right.
That's insane. But
that looks like 13 seconds.
It looked like you were terrified that they were going to all of a sudden audible and go, we're going to take, they're never going to do that.
No,
they were never going to do that. They were just going to run it, kick a field goal, get out of there. And then the Trubisky thing with the timeout. What? He has to go in for a play.
He has to. He literally, even if they take a timeout, Allen can't come back in.
He has to run a play.
For a play, yeah. That was always going to be happening.
And even then, most concussion protocols don't take as short as they did. Not going to say too much on that, but they don't typically take that little of time. 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt, you're listening to The Extra Point Show on WGR.